Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. Is Zach Seiko? Zach, how we doing this week?
Hey, we're doing great, Jim. A win's a win, right? A win's a win, and they are still in control of their playoff destiny. So kudos to, props to Penn State for winning when other teams did not.
That it's win and advance. That's what we come to now in college football. Just survive.
Yep, and I mean, other teams couldn't do it. Florida knocking off Ole Miss. Oklahoma, Alabama didn't even have a prayer against Oklahoma. So Texas A&M losing to an under 500 Auburn team. I mean, Penn State won. Those teams did not.
And, you know, the other part to this, Zach, is it just feels like in college football right now, going on the road, it really is just about surviving.
Yeah, it certainly seems that way. I mean, Minnesota pulled out all the stops against Penn State. Like I said, that's why I don't look at this as we are talking about a close win and not a loss. So at home, on the road, Minnesota had 2 weeks to prepare. And I should not have, I will be as transparent as possible with this because I did not think Minnesota would give Penn State as much of a fight. But, you know, when you look back at it, okay, Minnesota had 2 weeks to prepare for this game. They also had 2 weeks to get healthy. They had the bye week, and Penn State, you know, going off of the Purdue game, but it was back-to-back road trips that make this difficult. And then the injury bug bites you. So there's a lot of circumstances here. But honestly, what impresses me the most is that despite all of that, Penn State still won. Despite not one, but two blocked kicks on special teams, Penn State still wins. I don't know how many other teams come away with that, with a win against Minnesota, with all things considered.
Well, and if you look around, I know there's a lot of folks that think the Southeast Conference is the conference. It's deeper, stronger, better, faster, complete tall buildings and all that. Right. That's right. It just means more. But what I found fascinating is how many of those top teams with two and now three losses, those three losses include losses to teams like Arkansas and Kentucky and Vanderbilt. And just to add to the whole road discussion, Alabama is 0-3 on the road in conference games.
Yeah, there's the argument that, oh, well, the SEC is just that deep, that many teams can win on any given Saturday. I don't know why that is neglected in the Big Ten. I feel like we should really just have an SEC versus Big Ten bowl game schedule in itself. So whatever your comparable opponent is, so Purdue's would be Mississippi State, for example, just to settle all of this, because I don't understand, and I never will, the argument that Florida or Kentucky or Mississippi State would make way and run through the Big Ten or any other conference, when that is just flat out not true. It's just not true at the end of the day. Those teams are good and probably would pick up maybe a win or two differently in, say, the Big 12 or the ACC. But it's not like they're going – I mean, Mississippi State, for example, doesn't have a conference win. Kentucky has one conference win. Those teams how can you make the argument that Minnesota would not beat Kentucky? Because they would. Minnesota showed me that they would beat a Kentucky team, that an Iowa would probably, I think an Iowa team would make it challenging for Texas A&M. Why is that such a guarantee? Why do we assume that Texas A&M is just going to outright beat everybody else in the Big Ten, or Alabama would be undefeated in the Big Ten? Because it's not true. They would lose to Oregon. They would lose to Ohio State. They would lose to Penn State. And honestly, Iowa would give them a run for their money. Minnesota would give them a run for their money. Why are you losing to Oklahoma that convincingly? That was in a last-second field goal. Alabama had no chance.
Exactly. And I do think you brought up a good point. I think about the middle tier of the Big Ten, I think, is a bit underrated. you mentioned like Iowa, but also Washington, USC, and just also another example of that whole road issue. USC is 4-1 at home, 1-4 on the road. Same thing. Washington, I don't know if you have looked at this disparity. Washington is 6-0 at home, 0-4 on the road.
Traveling coast. I mean, as much as I like the expanded Big Ten Conference, Jim, we can also be objective and say that this is just, it's outrageous. The travel, the distances, coast to coast. There was a reason it was set up this way. And I like the idea of Penn State playing USC and Washington and eventually Oregon and going on those cross-country trips. But these are still college teams. These are student athletes. And we're only talking about this from a football case. Basketball, volleyball, baseball, softball. It's madness. It's torture. And when you're not a professional team that's getting paid millions and millions of dollars to make these cross-country trips, and that's all you're preparing for, student athlete. They're doing school, and then they're also playing sports. And I get it, they're being compensated now, but the idea of these expanded conferences that just go all across the country and then some, it's really not right at the end of the day. So I am not surprised that a lot of teams' away records are not good. But you know who's undefeated on the road? Penn State.
They are. Now, they've been challenged. USC, Wisconsin, mm-hmm. Minnesota now. I think they were behind at halftime in all of these games. But they found ways to win. I'm going to use that kind of as a segue to talk a little more about the game itself. And going into this game, it was so important for James Franklin and his reputation. After losing to Ohio State, he got, you know, the can't win the big game, you know, deal. This game was important. And by any definition, a huge game, a lot to it. And I think James Franklin doing what he did on that last drive, Zach, three times going for it on fourth down, the first one in his own territory with the fake punt.
Yep.
Boy, that took a lot of guts.
I mean, there's a lot of ways you can look at that, right? One, they converted on all three of those fourth downs. Kudos to Penn State. Props to James Franklin for going all in and getting a victory and not giving, because he knew. He knew that if Minnesota, because the defense wasn't having its best performance. At the end, I know that Minnesota manufactured 9 points on special teams, but the problems weren't offensively, they were defensively. But to address this point going forward on fourth down, you can also look at it in the inverse. Penn State wasn't converting on third down. They were what, 1-11, 1-12?
Yes.
It was bad. So, Penn State converted three consecutive fourth downs. They only had one third down conversion, so you can look at it one way or another, but you still have to convert. Your back is against the wall, and you decide to run a fake punt in your own territory, knowing very well if you don't get it, you're going to be scrutinized, you're probably going to lose that game, and who knows? I know there's all this chaos, and the chaos isn't done, but in my mind, I don't know that a 10-2 Penn State team gets into the college football playoff. I don't know that they do. So James Franklin understands that, look, it's in our hands. It's in our control. We can win this game on our terms. And that's what they did.
And that's what I think was important. And I do believe over time that James Franklin has improved as a coach. Mm-hmm. There were times he was losing games that he shouldn't lose. That hasn't been the case now for a few years. He's won all the games he was supposed to. But what I think also has happened is in big games, he has gotten conservative. I think that hurt him in the Ohio State game.
Which time?
Yes. But I don't know if this was an example of him learning from that or not, or if it's just he felt more comfortable, you know, with the gutsy calls against the Minnesota than he would have against an Ohio State. But there was no doubt this was an effort to play to win as opposed to playing to avoid losing, Zach.
Yeah, I mean that's certainly the case. I think James Franklin I think James Franklin has come a long way as a head coach, but more importantly, Penn State has come a long way as a program. And I'm not even referring all the way back to what everyone, is going to assume to right, Bill O'Brien and everything else. I'm talking about when James Franklin actually took over a program that did still have the scholarship limitations, but had the limitations in terms of facilities, housing, nutrition. And it's been a decade plus long process. So it's not even about X's and O's. It's about being competitive with Ohio State, Georgia, Texas on these different fronts that people do not see. You see the result on Saturday, but all the behind the scenes stuff that James Franklin has been working for and finally seeing the fruits of his labor come true. That is why. So James Franklin has been more than just a head coach, been more than just a football coach. He's been a program rebuilder. And in this age in college football, I don't know anyone better suited to do that at Penn State. I really don't. To rebuild it to fit this modern age of college football, James Franklin is the only guy that was right for this spot.
And the way college football has changed the last couple of years, it wasn't just about getting up to speed with the where college football was a couple of years ago. It's now changing it every time over the last couple of years. And you can see transfer portal. He has a portal strategy. He has a way to that he does it. NIL, we all know that's been a tough situation for Penn State, but they seem to be overcoming it and really advancing on that front also. So, yeah, I give a lot of credit to James Franklin. I think the guts that he showed in making those fourth down plays. And Zach, what's also interesting to me is the three fourth down calls were each different. One, obviously, the fake punt. One was the quarterback sneak. And the third one, they threw the ball on fourth and a foot. So I thought that was also impressive. It wasn't just about decide, hey, we're going to go for it, but they did it in a way that they were able to execute it.
Yeah, they did an excellent job of changing things up. It wasn't obvious. They didn't run the same play twice. I mean, in that sequence, but
yes.
At Penn State, they executed it to perfection across the board. No complaints.
They really did. And I think another very important factor in all of this is the play of Drew Aller, which I think gets overlooked quite a bit. We're running out of time here at quarter one. I want to ask you, though, about Drew Aller. And Zach, we're going to do that when we come back right after this break. So stick around for that. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesdays, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Zach Seiko. It's quarter number two of our show. Zach, why don't you tell our listeners where they can find everything from you?
I appreciate that, Jim. So I am the host of Locked On Nittany Lions. It's available on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Talking Penn State football, Penn State wrestling, Penn State men's basketball. Everything you need for your favorite Penn State sports teams is over at Locked On Nittany Lions, a daily 30-minute podcast devoted to Penn State.
Very good. All right. And some great stuff over there. When we finished up in quarter number one, we were talking about James Franklin, but I think somehow a five-star quarterback gets overlooked, Zach. And just in again, talking about that last drive, we missed that prior to the fake punt. It was third and long. Drew Aller scrambled to get them close. And that's not something I'm sure he would have been capable of doing a year ago. The second fourth down, it was Drew Aller with the quarterback sneak. The third fourth down, it was Drew Aller. Play was designed to go to Nick Singleton. He was covered, had to poise within the pocket to move and find an open Tyler Warren. Those are all, none of the three are really about that big, huge arm of his. It's about all the other things in being a complete quarterback, Zach. And somehow I think it gets overlooked.
I'm on the same page here, and I'm at a loss for words for it too. To put it into perspective, just how far Drew Aller has come. I mean, the building blocks were there for last season. He's always been somebody that protects the football. He's never been egregious. His decision making is not bad. Does he always make the best decisions? Maybe not. Is he going to opt for the safe check down as opposed to the risky pass? Sure, but now there's more of a balance. So he's gotten back to the middle of that, where he is taking the risk, where he is taking the downfield shot, while at the same time still protecting the football. If the football's going to go into anybody's hands, there is nobody I trust more than Drew Aller, because Drew Aller, 99 times out of 100, makes the right decision. That's the key here. He makes the right decision. So that's avoiding a sack. That's throwing it away. I think Drew Aller understands better than anybody else, at least in terms of quarterback play, that you can live to fight another down. You don't have to throw a football into triple coverage just because you're being pressured. You have the sideline. You have the check down. You can run it 4 or 5 yards and get at least something. It might not be a first down, but you at least give Penn State an opportunity to continue the drive, or to say, hey, maybe we do go for it here on fourth down because Drew made the right decision. We needed 10. He got a 7, under, even though that wasn't the first read. Drew Aller is veteran minded. I just like the way that Drew Aller processes the game. I like that he has more of a better emotional display, because we saw an emotional display from Aller last year, and there were some hard conversations about that, that's unacceptable in college football. Now, granted, he was 19 and starting for the first time. This is all brand new territory to him. So to see him kind of take that and mold it into something different that is now passion, that's now fiery, it is a testament to what he did in the offseason, because that was the only thing he was missing. He was a quality football player, but how was he as a leader? How was he as a tough football player? And that's what needed to change, and it has. Whether that's Andy Kotelnicki, whether that's a life coach outside of football that we don't know about, whatever it is, Aller has grown up, and all of the attributes that were good to him a season ago are now great.
And I also liked, and we don't know what the words were, but after that pooch punt, he wanted to call the timeout, all of that. Yeah. Not sure exactly what all transpired with that, but it was obvious how upset Drew Aller was. Mm-hmm. I liked, though, that they showed it at the sideline, him sitting down, settling down, and James Franklin came over and talked to him. And you just kind of, I got the impression from the body language, it was kind of one of those, hey, everything's okay, we're good here, let's just deep breath, keep going forward, we're going to win this game, and we're counting on you. So I give some credit also to James Franklin handling all of that. Now, we're talking about all the positive stuff, but there were some things here, Zach. You mentioned it, 1 for 11 on third down, which I think is the most stark statistic coming out of this game. It was also starting slow, a couple of special teams breakdowns. But I think some of this, well, I'll even tie in the 1 for 11 on third down. Those first two drives were stopped when they had third and short and couldn't convert. It felt like Minnesota was better prepared. They were prepared for Tyler Warren in the Wildcat, and they were prepared to be stout right in the middle of their line.
Yeah, I mean, they did a good job of, like I said, they had 2 weeks to prepare. So they saw everything. They had all the recent tape, all the recent footage. But the issues weren't offensive. under all of the circumstances, Penn State still scored 26 points against a top 20 Minnesota defense. The issue was the fact that Minnesota was able to somehow score 25. Okay, so all of my concerns are related to the defense, because Tyler Warren still had, what, 8 catches, over 100 yards, clutch plays when they needed him most. Drew Aller, 21 of 28, 244 yards, a touchdown through the air, a touchdown on the ground, no interceptions, when Minnesota is close to averaging almost 2 interceptions per game. So against a defense that they are known for forcing mistakes, Penn State's offense didn't make any mistakes, at least mistakes that cost them. Sure, they a missed pass here, a misread here, absolutely. But in terms of the costly mistakes that lose you ball games, that did not happen on offense. Penn State's defense, we're 11 games in, Jim. The tackling is atrocious. It's abysmal. Whatever word you want to use to describe it, a negative adjective, it will fit. I looked at Pro Football Focus, the analytical grades, because I needed to see, okay, how bad was it? 9 Penn State defenders had a red mark in the tackling category.
Wow.
Why 11 games into the season is this an issue? KJ Winston was by and far Penn State's best overall tackler. He didn't have a missed tackle in his first 2 seasons at Penn State. But is it really, does your team overall tackling ability go down that much, that significantly, because of one player? And it's everybody. It's Abdul Carter. It's Denai Dennis Sutton. It's Zane Duran. It's Tony Rojas. It's Dom DeLuca. It's Jalen Reed. Everybody is missing a tackle or taking where it's a broken tackle. Or honestly, this is just my personal opinion. When you have an opportunity to make a tackle, but you take a bad angle to the ball carrier, that one upsets me more than a broken tackle, because it's the offensive player, you know, being physical, imposing their will. But when you have an opportunity and it's just because you kind of take a lazy angle to the ball carrier, or a bad one, I don't even want to say lazy, right? I don't think any Penn State football player is lazy. But a bad one, you misread the lane that you need to go through, that one upsets me more than a broken tackle because the guy lowered the shoulder.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the tackling. And the thing that upsets me, Zach, with the tackling is when they don't wrap and they can't.
Yeah, arm tackles.
Or they try to blow up the ball carrier instead of wrapping and taking them down. And sometimes you try to blow them up and they just bounce off of you instead mm-hmm. of wrapping. I'm with you. That is very upsetting, and I hope it's becoming more of a focus. Although here we are, 11 games into the season,
and it's clearly not a focus, because this has been a reoccurring issue since Bowling Green. This hasn't happened in one game. It was happening against Bowling Green. It was happening against USC. It was happening. Honestly,
it happened in West Virginia.
Yeah. So and what that leads to, why that is so important. Oh, it's just tackling. No, it is not just tackling. Because what is so bad about it is when it's 1st and 10 and you have an opportunity to take Minnesota's running back and tackle him for a loss behind the line of scrimmage. Then it's 2nd and 12. You're playing behind the chains. Now it's 2nd and 6. So what turned into a negative 2-yard loss is now a net positive of 6. And then that allows Minnesota to open up the playbook. They can pass it. They can run it again, make it 3rd and manageable, instead of, you know, like I said, playing from behind the sticks. So a missed tackle allows an offense to perform that much better because it opens up the playbook. There were a lot of plays where it's like, man, Darius Taylor or Marcus Major, it should be 2nd and 13, or it should be 3rd and 9, and somehow it's 2nd and 5. It's 3rd and 3, and that's why Minnesota was able to convert more often than not, or at least sustain drives, because of those missed tackles. It's a domino effect.
It really is, and like we said, late in the season, I'm not sure how much it's going to change, but I'd like to see it better come playoff time. All right, let's take the last couple minutes, look ahead. Penn State has Maryland.
Yeah.
Penn State, a big favorite at home. What can we expect from Maryland? What should we be looking for?
Maryland's, Maryland's a lost cause. I think they're playing for the future at this point. I actually like this team, or at least gave them a little bit of respect going into the season. I like what they had offensively. I think they were dynamic. They at least had a ground game to rely on. and that really hasn't been the case. I mean, they have a couple of good running backs, don't get me wrong. Billy Edwards, the quarterback, is dual threat. You just have to account for Ty Felton. He's their leading receiver, 1,100 yards, 92 receptions. He is the go-to guy. So AJ Harris needs a bounce back game. If he can take away Ty Felton, Maryland doesn't really have a lot of answers here. But I think Maryland with nothing to lose, right? Penn State still needs to win that game. If they lose to Maryland, I'm not saying they do, I'm not saying they will, but Penn State still is playing with something on the line. Maryland's got nothing to lose. They got nothing to lose.
I think they understand that. I hope they do. It's home. Last question, though, Zach. Penn State still has a shot at the Big Ten, going to the Big Ten championship game if Michigan were to upset Ohio State. Should Penn State fans want that?
Ooh, I'm glad we brought this up because I could go on about this for 30 minutes or more. I hope they don't get into the Big Ten championship game, honestly, because I don't know that they project well, just given the recent group of injuries. You kind of need that additional week to prepare. Also, there's the thought of the home playoff game. If you win the Big Ten championship, you get a bye. A Big Ten championship game, because I would assume that they lose to an Oregon team because of where Penn State is right now, it does not benefit them. So I would rather them take the extra week, get a home playoff game against a more favorable matchup, and get the chance to add another bye week here at the end of the season to get healthy and get in the best shape as possible and prepare for the playoff as opposed to another opponent.
All right. I agree with you, Zach. That's it for quarter number two. And Zach, coming in next is Sean Gold. You want to stay tuned for that. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. I'm Jim Galante. He is Sean Gold from Sean's Take. Sean, how are we doing this week?
We're doing all right, Jim. We're doing all right. Last week was not a great one. So, you know, that's where we're at.
I don't have to talk you off the ledge. You're okay?
I'm okay, though. And I apologize to the listeners who may have tailed my picks this past weekend. I hope you tailed Jim instead.
Well, I hope so too. Let's talk about it, Sean. What were our records for last week?
Well, you know, I'd prefer to plead the fifth on this one right now. But 1-5, I think, was my record.
Now, what was Jim's record?
You know, Jim, I wasn't exactly tracking it, but I'm going to go with a 4-2 record for you this weekend. Absolutely killing it. It was a good weekend for you. I wish I heard your picks before I said mine this past week.
It was a good week for Jim. I will take it. I will take my 4-2. And I promise I won't rub it. Oh, I shouldn't make promises I can't keep. Be aware, I may be celebrating the rest of the show here, Sean. I like winning. If you haven't found that out about me yet, know it now.
Well, you,
I am a poor, poor winner. I'm a bad winner, okay?
You deserve to be able to celebrate this week for how it went.
I always look at it this way, Sean. Celebrate while you can, because you don't know how next week's going to go. So I'm going to take my victory here. I'm going to take my victory lap.
Well, you know what? I don't blame you at all. I think I'd be doing the same thing if the tables were turned.
All right. Well, let's take a look at our games from last week. Let's start with that Indiana-Ohio State game. That was the big game of the week going into the weekend. All eyes were on it. Indiana got out to a nice start. I'm sure you felt pretty good after that first drive. They stopped Ohio State. They scored themselves. Indiana looked pretty good to start the game, and then it just all fell apart.
It did, and you know what? We got the typical Ohio State start. We've seen Ohio State down 7-0 in a lot of games this year where they end up getting a blowout victory. So it's interesting that Ohio State, first possession offensively, first possession defensively, usually don't go their way. So I was feeling good, and then you just see the mistakes. You see, I think it was a blocked punt and a kick return touchdown. 14-point swing right there. It's hard to stay in a game when you give up points like that, back-to-back, big plays that should not have happened. That was the downfall of Indiana. Outside of that, Indiana really didn't play that bad. They needed to get more going on offense, but, you know, you're not going to beat a big-time team playing how they did with the mistakes.
Other than that first drive and then a touchdown late, garbage time, Indiana could not move the ball. Ohio State's defense was the strongest unit on the field. Indiana, even with those two scores, their total yards was 153 yards. That's not going to get it done, Sean.
It's not going to get it done at all. And now the question is, how much do you panic for Indiana? They should still be a playoff team. They'll probably only end with one loss. But how much can we trust them against, you know, one of these SEC teams they may end up playing in the first round of the playoffs?
It's going to be interesting to see. And again, FYI to our listeners, we're recording before the Tuesday night rankings come out by the College Football Playoff Committee. And Indiana, I think, will be firmly still in it, thanks to, you know, the Southeast Conference just blowing up and everybody having three losses. But yeah, it will be interesting to see how Indiana bounces back from it. Speaking of the Southeast Conference, we had Ole Miss at Florida. Ole Miss was a 10-point favorite. I took Florida. Florida not only covered the spread, they won the game 24-17, Sean. And I'm telling you, Florida is a different team with DJ Lagway, the freshman quarterback. They re-upped their coach for next season. Florida, I was not stunned that they won this game.
No, and I should have. This is one I for sure regret. We've talked about Ole Miss, you know, not quite being ready this entire season. They've had really good moments, but then they have these bad losses. And you saw right through that, especially with how Florida has played the past couple of weeks. And I should have seen that too. At the Swamp, it's a tough place to play for anybody. You know, Florida, they're playing a lot better football right now, and Ole Miss just wasn't built for the moment.
My young friend, perhaps now you'll listen more often to the old guy. Wisdom that comes with the year, Sean. Anyway, next up is our Penn State Nittany Lions at Minnesota. We both took Penn State. Penn State won, but they couldn't cover that 12.5-point spread. Boy, this looked like that early season Penn State team starting out slow, struggle running the ball, struggles on special teams. They snuck away with the win. Is this just playing that on-the-road struggles?
I think that's what it is. This was, you know, looking back at it, you can see how this was a trap game for Penn State here. Minnesota's played them tough before. They've ruined their season a couple times before in the past. And, you know, I thought Penn State was going to be able to just put their foot on the gas and run them over, and that's not what happened. Minnesota, to their credit, came to play. They had a really good first half. Penn State made the right adjustments in the second half to win the game. But it wasn't exactly the performance I wanted to see from Penn State, but I'm also not concerned.
No, I think especially when you look around college football and see it's tough to win on the road. And Penn State, they're unbeaten on the road, but they were behind at halftime. USC, Wisconsin, Minnesota, they have had their struggles on the road along with everyone else. They have found a way to win, but it was, as we said, a struggle. They got away with 1 point. All right, next up, the crazy Big 12. You had BYU at Arizona State, and Arizona State was maybe a bit surprising to some people, a 3-point favorite. They were at home. This was just one of those, again, the Big 12, there's such parity there. I think I read somewhere there's still like 8 or 9 teams who could conceivably make it to their championship game, which is just crazy at this point in the season. Arizona State won it 28-23. They were the home team. I had Arizona State. You had BYU.
Yeah, and you know, I told you right after we recorded last week that that was one of the ones that I was, my heart was torn on, you know, who was, more my brain was torn on, who was going to be able to cover this spread and win this game. And Arizona State just came out really fast, 21-3 in the first half. BYU played a much better second half, but too little too late in a game that they really needed. And, you know, BYU, of course, is still in contention for the Big 12, but after an undefeated start to the season, it sure doesn't look like BYU is, you know, a very good team right now.
Well, sometimes I think the game is random enough. There are enough close games that I believe there'll always be teams who somehow find a way to win. And we don't allow for the fact of luck. And sometimes the ball just bounces your way. There's over 100 teams in college football. There's going to be a couple teams midway through the season who are undefeated, but they just had everything bounce their way, and it will catch up to you. I think it caught up to BYU. That's why I wasn't a strong advocate of them when they were undefeated. I think the perfect example, and this is just me wanting to rub it in, we saw Pitt. Pitt was a 7-0 team. How many have they lost? They've lost four in a row. And they were very fortunate early in the season. They had some wonderful comebacks. But you know what? They weren't as good as their record said they were, Sean. And that eventually catches up to you. All right. Next up, another Big 12 game. It was our Colorado Buffaloes at Kansas. Colorado was a 3-point favorite going into this. They were on the road, though, to Kansas. Kansas has been playing well for a few weeks. Sure enough, Kansas knocks off your Colorado Buffaloes, Sean.
They did. This made it a very hard weekend, Jim, to see Colorado go down. And, you know, at halftime, I even thought 23-14, I'm not overly concerned with Colorado right now. We've seen them make the halftime adjustments and just explode in the second half, scoring 28 in the second half and blanking their opponents. And to Kansas's credit, they won the first half and they won the second half too. And that's the difference in this game. We've seen Colorado be a comeback team before because of how explosive that offense is. But this offense just could not move the ball effectively against Kansas. And major credit to what Kansas has done the past couple weeks. They've taken down some pillars in the Big 12 after it looked like their season was completely done. And they, you know, I mean, it's the path for Colorado now is incredibly difficult. They need a lot to go right for them. When I kind of thought that this team was destined to, you know, be in that Big 12 championship game, that's looking like a pipeline dream right now.
It does. It is a pipe dream, I believe. I think Colorado's done. And by the way, I just think we need to stay away from the Big 12. I think it's so random. And you'll notice, I don't think we have a Big 12 game in our picks for this week, Sean. And there's a reason for it. I don't think I want to touch the Big 12.
I completely agree.
All right, let's go to our final game, which was Army and Notre Dame. It was at Yankee Stadium. And boy, Army just didn't look like they belonged on the field with Notre Dame. It was similar to the Navy-Notre Dame game. And good for us, we both had Notre Dame.
Yeah, it gave immediate flashbacks to how that Navy game went. And, you know, even though I was 0-5 going into that game, I was pulling for Army there. I was really hoping that Army could upset Notre Dame, and I was going to take an 0-6 week if it meant Army was going to get a win. And Notre Dame got out to a really fast start. I think it was the first time Army's gone 3-and-out in their first possession all season. It may have even been the first time they didn't score on their first possession. And right when you hear that, you kind of start to get concerned. And then Notre Dame's just ripping off these big runs, explosive plays, and that was a fast defense. They matched the triple option really well with how they could cover sideline to sideline with their linebackers and their speed there. And it just was. It was a different level of football. Army's had an incredible year. They're a great team. But Notre Dame's a different beast.
They are. And we do have Notre Dame in our list of games this coming week. And I'll be real interested in seeing what your thoughts are. They are going to play USC at USC. And you know, I'm not sure what to think about that game. I usually have my picks ready and made. That one, I'm still holding off on it. I know who I'm rooting for, Sean, but I just don't know which way to pick for that one. But there was no doubt it was a mismatch. Army does not belong at that level. All right, that's it for quarter number three. When we come back, our picks for this coming week. Stay tuned for that. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, Enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. I'm Jim Galante. He is Sean Gold from Sean's Take. Sean, it's a clean slate. You're 0-0 for this week. We've got six picks to make. Are you ready for that?
We're ready. Let's bounce back, Jim. Let's bounce back. That's all I got to say.
I'm hearing a lack of enthusiasm there, but let's fire away. Let's start with the game. It's Michigan at Ohio State. Ohio State, they've got, I don't know if I should say they got a lot at stake, because if they lose this game, they'll still be in the playoffs. But it's still Ohio State, Michigan. For some of those fans, this means more than the conference championship game. This means more than the national championship. Ohio State, they've lost three in a row to Michigan. And in this one, though, they are a 20.5-point favorite. Michigan has not been a good team all year, Sean, but they say when rivalries like this happen, you throw out the records. How about you? Are you ready to throw out the records?
You know what? I am. There's something about rivalry games where it doesn't matter. And I, you know, being a Yale alum, I just watched Yale Harvard this past weekend.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. And Harvard was really supposed to handle us in that game, but it doesn't matter how either team are. When you get to that game, stakes are different. You throw the records out. I'm a firm believer that you throw the records out for some of these big games, and I'm going to give that to Michigan this week. Throw the record out. Michigan, you have seen Ohio State ruin some of your best seasons. You've ruined some of Ohio State's best seasons. I don't think Michigan is going to upset Ohio State in this one, but I would not be surprised if it's a slow start for Ohio State and they pull away late. But it's too little, too late to cover the spread. So give me the Wolverines on the road, plus 20.5.
I've got Ohio State in this one because a very simple reason. Michigan is bad. They're bad. If this were at home for Michigan, I'd be tempted, but it's not. It's in Columbus. I think Ohio State lets out their frustration from the last 3 years, Sean, and just puts a whooping on them. I'm going with the Buckeyes, but I do want to ask you a question as someone who I know you follow Penn State, you like Penn State as a fan. If Michigan were to beat Ohio State, Penn State would get the chance to go to the Big Ten championship game. Would you like that to happen, or would you rather Penn State just sort of skate into the playoffs and not have to worry about that game?
I would like that to happen. I would always like to see a little more momentum for Penn State. And now I will say, how are they going to match up against Oregon? That's a different question, but I still think it's better for Penn State to have a shot at the Big Ten title than it is for them to kind of skate in. So I know there's definitely an argument for, you know, Penn State just getting in, kind of staying a little more quiet, but I of course would like to see Penn State in the Big Ten championship game.
I want a home playoff game so badly, Sean. I don't care about the conference championship. If you win the conference championship, you get the bye, no home game. If they lose, good chance they'll drop and may not get the home game in the playoffs. I rest up, get ready for the playoffs. All right, next up, this is a sneaky good game. This is South Carolina from the Southeast Conference against Clemson from the ACC. Clemson, in their season, they rebounded from a just terrible loss against Georgia to start the season way back when. South Carolina has been coming on strong. It's a three-loss South Carolina team playing really well. The game is at Clemson. Clemson's a 2.5-point favorite, Sean.
It's a very interesting game. And I wanted to come on here and say I believe in Clemson. I believe in them at home. But South Carolina is one of the hottest teams in the entire country. After their loss to Alabama, which they only lost 27-25, South Carolina has dominated their schedule. Respectable wins against Oklahoma, Texas A&M, Vanderbilt, Missouri. I like the way the South Carolina team is playing, and I think this is a very dangerous spot for Clemson. The storybook ending should be Clemson gets a win and gets into the playoffs, but I think South Carolina may, you know, really put a nail in that and pull off an upset here, so I'm going to take South Carolina with the points.
I'm going with Clemson in this one. This season, it seems like the home teams have been doing so well as part of the equation, but I think Clemson, you mentioned it, they still have the playoffs that they're playing for. They have a real shot at it. And even as an at-large team, they've got a shot at that. I'm going to say that's enough incentive. I think Clemson's going to play really hard. I'm going with Clemson. Not a real confident going with Clemson, but that's where I've ended up. All right. Next up is Maryland at Penn State. Penn State, a 24-point favorite at home against Maryland.
What does Maryland have left to play for this season? They're not bowl eligible. A win doesn't make them bowl eligible. So I think that the mojo is gone for Maryland this year. Meanwhile, Penn State, they know they, you know, should have probably beaten Minnesota by more. They wanted to beat them by more. They're now back at home in what could be their final home game, you know, depending on if they get a home playoff or not. I think they're going to show up and show out. I think James Franklin is going to let everything loose in this game, work on any explosive plays that they haven't been able to work on thus far this season. I think Penn State's defense plays great. I think their offense scores, so it's a big spread. But Penn State at home against a team that it's not a rivalry, you know, in the sense of Michigan trying to show up against Ohio State. And Maryland, they have nothing left to play for this year. Give me Penn State here.
I'm with you on it. I think Maryland is ready to pack it in. I think Penn State wants to have that game where they just cruise away. James Franklin, as we know, he's aware. He wants to win this for us degenerates who are betting on him. I'm going with the Nittany Lions in that one. Next up, it's Notre Dame and USC. We've talked about this. Is Notre Dame as good as they appear to be ever since that terrible loss against Northern Illinois? And here's USC. Can I give you a fun fact for USC, Sean?
Let's hear it.
Fun fact. USC on the road, 1-4. USC at home, 4-1. USC is home against Notre Dame in this one, Sean. And USC is a 7-point underdog.
You know, I think this is a lot like Penn State USC right here, where Penn State, you know, we thought they were going to come in and just be able to handle them. And it was a really close game, an overtime win for Penn State where USC covered the spread. The stakes are even higher for USC in this one because they hate Notre Dame and they want nothing more than to beat Notre Dame in this game and potentially knock Notre Dame out of a playoff spot. That would make this USC season a success, despite everything that they've had to struggle through this year. So I'm going with the Trojans at home. It's going to be a tight game. There's going to be upset alert. And at a minimum, I think it's close enough to lose by less than a touchdown.
You know, this is one of those where I don't know if this is a little bit of my picking with my heart instead of my head. Notre Dame has been playing really well. You know, some of us were feeling like, well, maybe, just maybe Army could stick with them. You know, ever since Northern Illinois, Notre Dame has been playing better and better. It feels like Notre Dame should be the pick, but I'm going with USC. Again, that home road type thing. And I guess I would also just love nothing more than to see USC spoil things for Notre Dame. USC getting 7 points. That's the way I'm going with this one, Sean, also. All right. Next up, another rivalry game. It's Auburn at Alabama, which I think is important. Another, you want another fun fact?
Let's hear it.
Alabama has lost three games this year. You know what they have in common, all three losses?
Road losses.
They are road losses, my friend, which of course means they're unbeaten at home. Now, we had Auburn. Remember, they're coming off that upset win in overtime against A&M. They ran out to a big lead. A&M made the comeback. Auburn ties it up late, puts it, wins in overtime. Interesting. Auburn was at home when they upset Texas A&M. This one, it's Auburn at Alabama. Alabama, an 11.5-point favorite. And yes, this one is a true rivalry. They do not like each other. What are you seeing for this one?
Such a tough game because we're coming on two very different spectrums. Auburn, big overtime win. Are they going to regress? Alabama getting blown out by Oklahoma. Are they going to progress? I wanted to go with Auburn here, keep it close in the rivalry setting. But as you mentioned, at home, they're really good. And Kalen DeBoer, he's got to get his troops ready for this game. He knows that if you go 8-4 in your first season after replacing Nick Saban, you're already being asked to be fired by the end of the season. And already with three losses, people are unhappy. So there's so much at stake for Alabama. They win this game. They dominate it. They can still get into a respectable bowl game, even if it's not a playoff one, and be like, you know what? Let's build off of this in year two of DeBoer. So I'm going to go with Alabama here. A little reluctantly, but I think Vegas putting this at 11.5, it's more than I thought it would be. So I think they're telling us something that, hey, Alabama at home is a pretty legit team still.
And you're right. My fear was Alabama coming off the loss. Looks like they're not going to be in the playoffs, that they might not have much to play for. And you know, this rivalry game, and I wonder in this day and age if the players are as much into it as they were years ago. Might this be, we always talk about Penn State losing to Ohio State and losing the same game twice by not playing well the following week. I still think Alabama has enough. I think Auburn will come down off that big win last week on the road. I'm going with Alabama in this one, even with a big spread of 11.5. All right, next up, it's Texas. It's Texas A&M. This winner goes to the conference championship game. A&M, to have any chance to make the playoff, has to win this game. If Texas could win this, they get a chance. First year in Southeast Conference, getting a conference championship. Texas, a 5.5-point favorite on the road. What do you think?
I'll keep it simple. I think they're going to wear out Texas A&M. This is such an upset potential game, but I think Texas is the better team. I don't trust A&M to play for four quarters well enough to take down Texas. So there's so much at stake for Sarkisian and Texas here. Give me Texas on the road.
You know, A&M is home. There's been a theme to everyone. Do you know I picked the home team in all five games so far, Sean? All five games. Took the home team? Not this time. Texas still has a lot to play for. I think they win this one and go to the conference championship game against Georgia. All right, that's it for our show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.